From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. Today, we're looking ahead at the year in politics. There's a governor's race, congressional races across the state, and a handful of state legislative races in southwest Wisconsin. But first, lawmakers have a job to do, with a number of bills up for debate. Here today to talk about top politics in 2014 are Democratic State Representative Chris Dano of Trempealeau and UW La Crosse Assistant Professor of Political Science John Cavari. We did invite a number of Republican lawmakers from the area and across the state to join us, but they either declined our invitation or did not respond to our request. I want to continue the discussion on a number of legislative bills that may or may not be up for debate this year. Representative Dano, you have co-sponsored and sponsored a number of frac sand-related bills that have come before the state legislature. Can you talk about those? I know they have to deal with county issues, zoning issues.
Well, in all honesty, I'm not optimistic that they'll be up for debate. I mean, the challenge with being a minority legislator is often your bills don't get heard. Which again is a frustrating thing. I didn't agree with it when we were in the majority. If a bill is a good bill and it's a good idea, or at least merits some debate, it should be debated, at least have a public hearing in committee. My focus really with this is to make sure that we have adequate regulation in place of the sand mining industry. It's a booming industry, as we know, and we've had some problems. And any time you have a new industry, which rapidly expands, you will find that both the state and local government probably does not have the personnel in place to adequately do the monitoring they need to do. And if you look at what's happened, we've had a number of violations of state law and environmental quality regulations and permits.
A number of fines have come down.
And fines have come down.
And
I want to have people in place to be able to get out there and do the enforcement, the inspections. Right now, there's just simply not enough state employees to go around and get to all these sand mines and inspect them on a regular basis. And again, if you're a good operator, if you're doing things right, you're not going to mind having inspections being done. And quite frankly, an outside pair of eyes is often a good way to find problems and that you may not be aware of and get them addressed before they become major. So it's one of those things I think is really important that we do. But the DNR is only adding, I believe, two positions, and those are only for air quality. I'd like to see more positions just to generally make sure we're making sure all environmental processes are being handled correctly. I'm not optimistic. This is, again, if you look at the history of this administration, this is not an administration that's been inclined to add regulators or to put more regulations in. They've been wanting to go the opposite way. They've been loosening environmental restrictions. They've been making it easier to pollute, making it easier to dump, to deposit fill in our waterways, to destroy wetlands. So I'm not optimistic that under the current administration, the current legislature will be able to get these bills to a place where they'll become law. But, part of the job is you need to try and at least have the debate, have the discussion. And there's the maybe we'll catch lightning in a bottle and get something moving, but we'll see.
Why do you think that this is an issue that has such a hard time actually being pushed forward within the legislature?
You mean environmental regulation in general or the frac sand?
The frac sand. I mean, I know that there's a lot involved with the frac sand.
Well, I think part of the problem with the frac sand in some senses, it is still a regional issue. It most of it is going on in western Wisconsin.
So maybe people on the eastern part of the state don't totally understand.
If you're a legislator from northern Wisconsin or the eastern part of the state or represent an urban area, it really is not an issue that comes to mind as something that's critical to you. So that's a challenge. It is mostly the western section of the state here, into the southwest a little bit. But, we're relatively low population densities here. Our numbers of state legislators aren't the same as there are in the southeastern part of the state. And so it is a little more tricky to get that moving. Again, right now, though, there is a general ideological inclination against regulation of any sort. And so I think that's in some senses a bigger challenge than the issue of it being regional.
And I hate to keep comparing Wisconsin to Minnesota, but, I mean, it is pretty clear the differences that the two states have taken when it comes to addressing frac sand mining.
Oh, very much so. And what that's also led to is it's led to a migration of these companies into Wisconsin, I think, to some extent, because there's a somewhat lighter regulation. That's fine to some extent, but it concerns me, though, when you have companies that it makes me wonder what kind of actors they are if they're unwilling to comply with Minnesota state regulations, which I don't think we're that they were tough, but they weren't onerous. And if they're unwilling to comply with those regulations, it makes me wonder what kind of actor they're going to be. And that's a big part of this is if you're going to be a business doing business in Western Wisconsin, in the district, in the community, I hope they're good neighbors. And we want them to be good neighbors. And they all claim they want to be good neighbors, but the claim has to be met with real action.
John Cavari?
I think that there's a trade-off here between consistency of environmental policy so that, you know, every local government isn't doing its own thing and making it difficult for these companies to actually, you know, provide a service to make natural gas cheap in the United States. At the same time, there should be some local control and some, you know, fairly adequate environmental protections for our state's residents. So this is the challenge that the legislature is going to have and the DNR is going to have, and it's going to be interesting to see how it pans out.
Another bill, Representative Dano, that I see you've co-sponsored, or maybe you have sponsored, but it's regarding medical marijuana in the state of Wisconsin. This hasn't gotten much attention lately, but I'm wondering if you could talk about the mindset behind that bill.
Well, you know, really this one comes out of at one level, it comes out of the classic example of when you're a legislator, you meet people and you discuss them. One of my constituent is Jackie Rickert, the person that the bill is named after, and it's been named after for a number of years. She lives in my district. I met her. She talked to me. She contacted me when I was first running for office. And I can tell you, as a former police officer, I was a little bit skeptical.
I was wondering that from a former law enforcement agent.
But in talking with her and listening to her, you know, It's simply about, look, this is something that can make her life and the lives of other people with some serious chronic illnesses a little bit better, reduce some of their pain, reduce some of their suffering. You know, and why would I want to say no to that? How can I say no to that? After having met Jackie and looking at her situation and meeting other people who are in those situations, you know, I can't say no to trying to help them. And that's really what it is ultimately. And then if you look, you know, getting into the broader policy implications, again, having been a police officer, I'm no great fan of the war on drugs. I think it's been a failure in the long run. I think it's created a lot of problems for us as a country. It's led to the massive incarceration of a lot of people who probably shouldn't be in jail, who were in jail for nonviolent offenses. And we should be locking up people who are genuinely violent, genuinely dangerous, genuinely a real danger to the public. It really is, to me, should be dealt with more as a public health matter as opposed to criminal. Now, obviously, you have to have some reasonable constraints and controls. But, you know, look at – well, it's going to be interesting how the experiment goes out in Colorado and Washington State. But, you know, to me, it's about at a policy level dealing with that and then at the human level of trying to be decent to your fellow human beings who this is something they need that can relieve their suffering and – I'm not going to be standing in the way of that.
And John Cavari, we see the tide changing when it comes to marijuana laws across the country. What sort of chance does Wisconsin have at something like this actually coming to the floor?
Well, I think what I've read is that the legislative leadership really doesn't want to set this for hearings. I think what's interesting about this is that I think you're very right here. Public opinion has really changed, especially with the policy entrepreneurship in Colorado and Washington. Now, this is a topic that's really popular with my students at UWL.
I'm not surprised.
And I do an informal poll in class asking how many of the students support, you know, decriminalization or allowing medical marijuana. And far and away, it's a vast majority of the students. And I think 10 years ago, that kind of public opinion was much different. So I think the tide is changing.
How – with a bill like the medical marijuana bill or Fraxan bills or, you know, even this week we're hearing about the abortion bills being brought up again, how much will this being an election year impact what actually is passed within Wisconsin?
There's two approaches that I suspect the Republicans will take here. They're either going to go for what we call the feel-good, non-controversial bills that are not going to be the kind of thing that stirs anybody up. And so they can say, look, we did all these wonderful things, non-controversial, bipartisan, look at all the bipartisan support we have. Or they're going to go for the bills to motivate their base. I don't know which angle they're taking quite yet. I'm obviously not privy to internal Republican strategies for you know, legislative and electoral strategies, but those will be the two approaches. So either they're going to decide to push the bills that really makes their base fired up and happy, or they're going to try and push the bills that, you know, like I said, are feel good, make everybody happy bills. I suspect they're going to go for the feel good, because if you look at the Republican brand right now, and it's one of the reasons I'm not a Republican, because I think a lot of it's generally true. It's they're a party that's full of they're viewed as kind of extreme, somewhat callous, and so they're kind of viewed as being out there on the front. If you look, there's that new poll that came out that said there's been a significant decline in identification as Republicans. The Democrats have fallen off a bit too because of the partisanship, but Republicans, I think, are at their lowest rate in the country for party identification that they've been in a long time, down to only 28% of the total population identifies themselves as Republicans. 46% identify as independents. The loss has come from people who are abandoning the Republican Party. And they've also got problems with other groups, women, minorities, pretty much anybody who's not an older white male. You know, I think that is where you may see them go more of the feel-good route, but we'll see.
And it does even seem like Republicans within the state are divided on certain issues, like the abortion issue, like the tax issue. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
The lack of a Republican primary also, I think, is going to indicate that the party – I mean, I don't have a crystal ball, so it's really hard to say what's going to actually happen. But my theory would be that because Governor Walker won't see a significant Republican primary, that the party will go more moderate, more towards the median voter.
And there have – actually, let's talk about the governor's race now. There are a couple of Republicans who have decided they want to run against Governor Walker. Like you said, we're not sure if it's anything serious. Mary Burke has announced that she wants to run as a Democrat. There's a couple other Democrats on the ticket. Are we looking at a governor's race here in Wisconsin that is going to be – an expensive race? Is there going to be a lot of money dumped into this election? And what sort of impact will that have on everyone living in the state?
Well, I think if you look at history, this will be an expensive governor's race. Governor Walker, you know, has sort of made himself a hero to the national right wing elements of the party with what's happened over the past couple of years. So there's going to be a lot of national support flowing to him. So it will be, and politics is just generally getting more expensive. I think what you are going to see is no matter what, I think whoever runs against Governor Walker, I think it'd be a wet dish rag right now, starts with 45% support. I think Governor Walker probably starts with probably a very solid lockdown 45% support. The battle is going to be over the next 5.1% that gets you over 50% between the, and those are the folks that tend to be often the ones that are most easily moved by media advertising, because they tend to, if you haven't made up your mind on Governor Walker at this point, you're probably not a terribly as engaged a voter, or you're just not very political. So you're the kind of person that, if they can reach you with the right, they're going to do all the different kinds of things to figure out what message will reach you. And they'll be trying everything. And that means they'll be spending a lot of money to get to that 5.1%. If you're part of that 5.1%, if you're part of that 10% that's undecided, you can expect, and they can identify you, you can expect to have a lot of stuff sent your way. You probably have a lot of people knocking on your doors, a lot of phone calls, a lot of mail.
And it goes back to what you
said. A lot of TV aimed at you that is not aimed at anybody else.
But if there are an increasing number of independents, I mean, I don't know if that is independents when it comes to state politics or national politics, mm-hmm. but...
Well, so the most recent Marquette University public opinion poll occurred, I think, in mid-October. And I think for an election that's over a year away, and for there to only be, I think it was a 48 to 45 Walker-Burke matchup with about
48 for Walker?
48 for Walker with 8% undecided. For, you know, an election that's over a year out, that's pretty remarkable that there's so few undecideds there. So in 2010, Walker raised about $10 million, and Tom Barrett raised about $5, $6 million. Now, the Feingold-Johnson race each raised about $14 million apiece. So I think that, you know, if the Burke campaign could, you know, meet the Walker campaign's expenditures there, She might close the gap, but she's got a huge name recognition issue. People don't know who she is necessarily, and I think that's going to be the challenge for the Burt campaign.
Will there be a lot of outside money coming into this election?
That outside money is now a part of American politics thanks to our wonderful recent Supreme Court decisions. I say that with all irony. Yeah, I would expect there will be. I think you're seeing third-party money will be in a lot of any race that's considered significant. You will see third-party money. You won't see third-party money in races that people consider pretty much settled or whatever, but yeah, no, there's going to be tons of third-party money coming in, I can guarantee it. And at every level, probably there's a substantial amount spent in legislative races, everything from state representative to Congress. There will be third-party money being spent.
So another person who has not formally announced that she would be running for governor, but I know she's exploring it, is State Senator Kathleen Vinehout, a Democrat from Alma. She has registered to run for her state Senate seat again. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, do either of you have any insight into this decision if she did decide to run for governor?
Well, she's my state senator, so obviously I'm watching it pretty closely. But I have not had a chance to talk with her since her accident. And I know I think that may
the
have.
Car accident, she
the car accident. The car accident. It was a fairly significant injury. Mm-hmm. So that may be having my only. And again, I'm purely speculating here that may have some impact on her decision. I mean, when you have a health issue, that always is family and health issues often have a major impact on your decision on what you're going to do as far as what office you're running for. I couldn't do this if my wife wasn't with me and my family wasn't with me. So I think we're going to have – I suspect that maybe – I'm guessing from the quiet I've heard from her that they're mulling things over right now. And what the final decision would have been, I wasn't privy to. Obviously, that's her decision to make, and I wasn't privy to it. But I think we'll see. I think that was the one issue that may create a little more of a complication for her, obviously, when you have a personal issue like that with your own health.
And, John, you talked about Mary Burke not having name recognition. Does Kathleen Vinehout have name recognition across the state?
Maybe not so much. I mean, she's obviously a regional.
Right. Everyone around here knows who
character,
she is.
Right, yeah. Right. But maybe less so in, Brown County and Milwaukee County and southeastern Wisconsin. So that's going to be a tough sell, too, especially if there are these, health complications, which, obviously you really feel for. But I think there's an argument to be made that even Tom Barrett, was a little slow out of the gate as a result of the, attack mm-hmm. that occurred at State Fair Park. So that was a challenge for him. I think that might be a challenge for the senator as well.
Well, and if you look at, though, and the thing I keep coming back to is I think this is what people, and that's why those of us who are Democrats think Scott Walker's eminently beatable. When you look at the numbers, people, virtually anybody who matches up with him is going to have strong, when the dust settles and the primaries are settled, whoever runs against Walker is going to have a very solid base of support, very active, very, very dedicated base of support to work from against the governor. I think the governor is going to have his own. He's got a pretty solid base of support. But you are going to have a very solid base of support once you clear that primary. Again, I think that ultimately the battle comes down to there's that saying that Walker people are going to vote for Walker. The people who don't like him are going to vote for his opponent. And the people who will probably decide this are going to be the independent voters in the middle. And that's usually the way most close elections are decided. It's the folks that kind of can swing either way. It was the term they've been referred to in Wisconsin is the Obama-Walker voter, people that voted for both President Obama and Governor Walker in the recall. I discovered that when I did some of my first political work was I'd be calling up people and asking them who they're voting for. This was 2004. And they were telling me George Bush for president and Russ Feingold for Senate. I'll be honest, I was completely mystified by that because you can't find probably two more diametrically opposed political figures. But we had a substantial number of people who were perfectly willing to vote for George Bush for president and then turn around and vote for Russ Feingold for senator.
Do you have an explanation for that, John?
Political schizophrenia is kind of the it's called the legislative paradox. For some reason, people don't like the establishment. They don't like Congress, but they will continue to vote their individual, member of Congress back into office time and time again. So I think that name recognition does play a massive role. And I think so that, again, not to kind of beat a dead horse here, but the challenge for the Burt campaign is obviously going to be getting the brand out there, you know, having a good, a well-crafted message resonate with the, you know, the average voter. And part of that is going to be how much money she decides to pour into her, her own campaign. I mean, Ron Johnson, Senator Johnson, put about $8 million of his own money into the Senate campaign in 2010. So that's going to be a factor. Now, the challenge for the Walker campaign, though, is obviously going to be the struggle with the 250,000 jobs goal or promise, however you want to look at it, but and how we've kind of fallen short of that goal. So there are challenges on each side. It's going to be a close one.
Really quickly, I want another pretty hot state Senate race. In Richland Center, State Senator Dale Schultz, a moderate Republican, has not officially announced whether or not he's running. There's some rumors that maybe he could run as an independent because a Democrat and a Republican has decided that they want to challenge him. Is this a race that people across the state will be looking towards?
I think so. I mean, you know, this is a – I think that at one level, this speaks to what the future of the Republican Party is. This was the guy – just a few years ago, he was the Republican standard bearer against Congressman Kyne. He was the majority leader in the Senate. Now he's basically an outcast in the party in many ways.
Because he voted with Democrats.
Because he's occasionally voted mm-hmm. with Democrats on issues that he considers important to him, his district. And, you know, I think this will be sort of a bellwether in many ways as to where Wisconsin is going. Are we going to harden into these really rigid partisan lines that Wisconsin has not really had for a long time, where you essentially have purity tests, or Wisconsin voters going to continue to support pragmatic, moderate people? I think that will be the test. It'll be interesting to see if he decides to stay in. I think if he stays in and wins the primary, it'll tell me a lot about where the Republican Party of Wisconsin is going. If he loses the primary, it will tell me a lot. If he doesn't stay in, it may not offer as much of an answer because it won't be as quite of a referendum on that approach. But believe me, Dale Schultz is no flaming liberal. I mean, he's a conservative Republican, but he just happens to be a little bit more pragmatic than this current crop of guys that are in there. So we'll see. I think it's going to be a real bellwether for us.
And Representative Dano, you are up for re-election. You have not registered with the Government Accountability Board yet.
I will be running.
Okay. Another noteworthy races. Representative Steve Doyle, a Democrat from Onalaska, is up for re-election. Representative Jill Billings, a Democrat from La Crosse, and Representative Lee Nierison, a Republican from Westby, they are all up for re-election as well. I know at least Representative Nierison, he does have a Democratic challenger at this point, so we'll see what happens with that. Very quickly, any final thoughts before?
As usual, it will be an interesting year. I do think Wisconsin, I think 2010 was an election that will have very long-term consequences for Wisconsin. I think we have a chance as we move forward to say the direction Wisconsin's going to go. I think we can choose the path that will lead us to long-term economic development and prosperity, or we can choose a path that won't. And I think a lot of these decisions will be made over these next couple years.
John Kavar, any quick final thoughts?
Conventional wisdom is that a midterm election is usually going to be a referendum on the incumbent or sitting president. And I think Republicans made huge gains in 2010. It's going to be a challenge for Democrats again in 2014. It's going to be good material for my classes and throughout the year.
John Kavari is a UW-La Crosse Assistant Professor of Political Science, and Democratic State Representative Chris Dano of Trempealeau joined us today on Newsmakers to talk about the outlook in politics in 2014. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCollum. Our production team includes John Gatto, Mary Meehan Strube, and our senior producer, John Davis. To hear archives of this and other recent editions of Newsmakers, visit our website at wpr.org/lacrosse. You can also find us on Facebook, updates on future shows, links to our archives, and more. Like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.